I don't even know where to begin. I've been warning of the deterioration and degradation of American campuses for several years. But I too have been caught off guard by the speed and ferocity of the wildfire. Our sages teach, fire does not ignite in a lone stick of wood, but in a pile of kindling. American campuses have been drying up for a long time. The tinder piling up year after year. Their purpose, to be a gathering point of a great society's exploration of knowledge and truth, has been compromised and undermined. Our liberal heritage withers. Simplistic binary categorizations of entire groups of people prevail over intellectual and communal pluralism. Oppressors and oppressed, racists and anti-racists, colonialists and anti-colonialists, whiteness and color, privilege and repression. It's all so tiresome, so tedious, and so self-important. The verdant vitality of the American campus is undergoing a kind of climate change that, if not reversed, will result in a catastrophic collapse of the ecosystems that feed vigor and vitality in the American soil. Some saw the early signs and warned we must change our ways. They cautioned that the environment was becoming toxic. But how do you persuade of the coming climate catastrophe if the changes are slow and incremental? It just gets a little warmer, a little drier, a little harsher every year, and not necessarily even in my neighborhood. But at some point, even a random spark will set the kindling ablaze. Today's wildfires are the result of years of neglect. As Hemingway wrote about bankruptcy, first gradually, then suddenly. Columbia University, right up the road in our neighborhood, this bastion of excellence, the alma mater of some of America's most revered heroes. Columbia graduate Alexander Hamilton, actually he didn't graduate. He studied at what was called King's College, which was the predecessor of Columbia. He purportedly said, "The truth will set you free, but first, it will make you miserable." We must recognize and accept the truth of what is happening. It will make us miserable, but we cannot address the problems if we do not know or prefer to ignore what they are. There is a malignancy at the very core of the elite institutions of higher learning, a clarion call to America that we are sick. And we are sick at the highest levels of American society. And as is so often the case, it's the Jews who clarify the extent of the cataclysm. The perpetual canaries in the mine. Abandonment of the liberal order is never good for Jews. We will always find ourselves on the wrong side of the binary categorizations. But more, anti-Semitism is never only about Jews. When the canary dies, it reveals a toxic and lethal environment that no living being can endure. It is not too late to reverse this campus climate catastrophe, but it is late. It goes much deeper than this or that president of a university, this or that board of governors or administration, which is why even the most brilliant university leaders are having such difficulties explaining their positions, let alone instilling a climate of learning, diversity, respect, and tolerance, values that they say that they and their institutions are committed to, and without which none of the other objectives of higher learning can be achieved. Why are universities failing to protect their Jewish students? There are only two possible answers. Either they cannot, or they will not. I think it's a combination of both. To clarify, I do not believe that there is a university president in office today who wants to see Jews assaulted, verbally or physically. I do not think that they want to empty their campuses of Jews. But I do think that many of them have a blind spot, an ideological blind spot when it comes to our people. That's why they, the most intelligent people in the world, give the impression of being so confused. What they see so clearly in other dimensions is opaque to them when it comes to the Jews. Free speech issues are relevant, but they're often served up as red herrings. Can you imagine what would happen to students were they to chant anti-black slogans, anti-Asian, anti-gay slogans on campus? Why is "go back to Poland" tolerated at Columbia? And by the way, what they mean by "go back to Poland" is not the modern country that is a member of the European Union. They mean Auschwitz. A student who even whispered to an Asian fellow, "go back to Japan," would be expelled within a day. The wrongness of the chant to an African-American student, "go back to Africa," would explode in the mind of university administrators with perfect clarity. They would not complicate us with free speech contentions or "it depends on the context" excuses. The uneven and inconsistent application of their own rules is a window into the mindset of university administrators, DEI functionaries, and faculty members. And the majority of Americans detect and recoil from the hypocrisy. The truth may make us miserable, but it will also set us free. I think that deep down, some senior administrators and plenty of faculty agree with the identity-based binary theories of social justice blazing through and consuming elite academic institutions. Some consider American Jews white and privileged. Some consider the Jewish state white and privileged. Some consider Zionism, the liberation movement of the Jewish people, inherently racist. Some believe that October 7th was justified as legitimate resistance. Some are strangely attracted to Hamas. "Hamas, we love you." They tolerate on their campuses. "I am Hamas. Long live the Intifada." At Columbia, anti-Israel students established what they called the People's University for Palestine, dedicated to fighting settler colonialism and genocide in the liberated zone. Those students who value free speech, who promote women's rights, minority rights, LGBTQ plus rights, and religious freedoms, who are so sensitive to safe space, don't try to set up the university, People's University for Palestine in Palestine. They don't like your kind over there. They imprison, torture, and kill your kind. These are not really pro-Palestinian demonstrations. They're more anti-Israel and anti-Zionist protests. Among the reasons they keep sliding into intolerance is not because of some lack of discipline by the protesters, really. At the heart of the Palestinian national movement is a rejection of coexistence and a hatred of Israel. That's the truth. And hence, the protests are not simply about Palestinian suffering, although I grieve for them more, I think, than Hamas. And I agree that it is a legitimate concern, morally and politically. It is entirely legitimate to debate whether a ceasefire should take effect, to lament the cost of human war and to want the bloodshed to stop is appropriate, and to demand a ceasefire is a legitimate place to be, if you're a student or an adult or anybody else. But fundamentally, the protests are about what Hamas represents in the protesters' eyes. Legitimate resistance to an alien, colonial Jewish presence in the land of Israel, a pathological rejection of the indigenous presence of the people who gave that land its name. The protests are about what they say it's about. From the river to the sea. Globalize the Intifada. It's not that the language of the protesters is unduly radical and should be more disciplined. It is the cause they fight for that is unduly radical. Why is We Are Hamas even acceptable at all at an American university? Why is Burn Tel Aviv to the Ground even acceptable at all? And why globalize the Intifada? Do they know what that was? It was a mass murder campaign on the streets of Israel, in restaurants, schools, buses, hospitals. On one of my visits to Israel during those years, I met Nathan, a security guard. He had recently received the Medal of Valor from the Israel Defense Forces for his extraordinary act of courage. He looked to me about 22 years old. He was an Ethiopian Jew who had immigrated to Israel in 1991 during Operation Solomon. As he reached maturity, he was drafted into a unit of the Border Police. He told me his remarkable story. On September 4th, 2001, he was on patrol outside a hospital in Jerusalem. It was 7 a.m. Someone brought to his attention a suspicious-looking person, and so he went to check out who that was. And he saw a man that looked in every way like an ultra-Orthodox Jew. There appeared to be nothing wrong, nothing seemed unusual. But then Nathan noticed something a bit strange. He saw that this ultra-Orthodox Jew was wearing a backpack. Nathan approached him, and he could smell alcohol on his breath at 7 a.m. He looked into the man's eyes. He felt a powerful surge of danger. He told me that he immediately cocked his rifle, but hesitated firing for one brief second because he wasn't 100% sure, and there were people around, and he was in front of a hospital. And at that second, the terrorist who disguised himself as a Haredi Jew exploded his backpack. He saw that Nathan was about to stop him. Nathan spent 2 weeks in a coma. The doctors thought he wasn't going to make it. But this slight, modest Ethiopian Israeli had enormous strengths in him, and he woke up. He spent another 5 months in rehab. During his stay in the hospital, the chief of the Israeli police came to visit. He described for Nathan the dimensions of his heroism. The chief said that they caught another terrorist working with the first one, who revealed in interrogation that their intention was to go into the hospital that Nathan was guarding and to explode themselves in the baby ward. That was the Intifada. That is what American students want to globalize. What they want to bring to these shores. This is righteousness in their eyes. This is social justice. Fighting to dismantle the world's only Jewish state by blowing yourself up in a maternity ward? By taking babies and children hostage, by murdering 1,200 innocent souls in their bedrooms? Woe to the students who believe these ideas. Woe to their teachers who taught them these ideas. Woe to administrators who do not reject these ideas loudly. Three brief comments to the community. First, to all our non-Jewish friends, and we have many of them. Every time I give a sermon, I get lots of emails and notes from non-Jewish followers. Where are you? Why are you leaving Jewish Americans to fight these battles alone? You swore to us that never again would the West tolerate this kind of Jew hatred. If not for our sake, respond for America's sake. They're burning American flags. They are shouting death to America. Both Iran and Hamas endorsed the protests this week. That tells you everything you need to know. Anti-Semitism is poison. It destroys the living tissues of the body politic. It devastates not only Jews, but also the institutions and societies that tolerate or encourage it. It is a dagger in the heart of liberty. Malignancies spread by neglect. Not merely by the vitriolic words and violent deeds of the bad people, but by the appalling silence and indifference of the good people. Wake up. Wake up. Before it's too late. Second, to young Jews. We've seen all this before. Do not begrudge these years. They can make you better. Nothing inspires us more than the fight for principle. Moral sentiment and grim resolve
lift the heart, and stiffen the spine. We get better through moral struggle. Rediscover your Jewish pride. Fight back.
You will find many allies, both Jewish and non-Jewish. I know that some Jews your age have joined the anti-Zionist crowd. They are a relatively small minority, but they have influence with you and your peers. Understand that their opposition to Israel is not really about Israel at all. Israel will survive and prosper with or without them. It's about you. It's about the future of American Judaism. We cannot survive separated from the majority of our people. Jews who tell you otherwise are deluded. And third, to the Jewish community at large, you too. You need to fight back as hard as you can. Every little action helps. Letters to administrators, pressure on radical faculty, withholding alumni contributions, pursuing legal remedies to enforce the right of your children to a safe environment. Join the protests. Be active. These are important times. I fear that we will lose the anti-Zionist young Jews in their late teens and 20s. I say this with deep sorrow because I have an open door, open arms, and an open heart to any and every Jew. All four children sit around the Seder table, including the wayward child. I do not believe in turning away any Jew, no matter what they believe. I do not ask anybody what they believe when they join the synagogue. For this reason, I clarified to the Board of Trustees when I arrived 20 years ago that I would not be comfortable in limiting membership to the synagogue. We will never have a waiting list to join this synagogue. It's hard enough as it is to sustain Jewish identity nowadays. Kol dichvin yeteh ve'yochal. All Jews who want to be part of us, come and join us. We will find a way to make room for all of them. We are in covenant one with the other. But from their perspective, I fear that most of the anti-Zionist Jews in Gen Z will not return in the coming years, if at all. Part of their critique is against the Jewish establishment. They feel that we rabbis and heads of Jewish organizations are collaborators with an illegitimate enterprise and that we have distorted Jewish values as they understand them. I hope I'm wrong. And I hope they come back to us. And if they do, open door, open heart, open arms. And for all you parents who have shared with us the agony of tension with your children, try hard to keep the relationship vital and alive. Do everything you can to avoid estrangement. Family is sacred in Judaism. But it is not too late for our younger children. For those who do not yet know how to ask teach them the ways of our ancestors. Explain to them that Judaism is anchored in Jewish peoplehood. When one Jew feels pain, all Jews feel pain. In our zeal to realize Judaism's universal aspirations, instill in them the deepest awareness that we cannot abandon our own people. Double down on Judaism. This has always been the response to anti-Semitism by those who survived these periods. It's why you're still here. We are the remnants of those who refused to convert, who fought for Jewish dignity, and outlasted our oppressors. This is a good time to recommit to the synagogue and to Jewish life. It's a good time to invest financially in the key institutions of Jewish life. Take the money that you would otherwise have donated to your alma maters and give it to us. Synagogues first, because we are the heart of the Jewish community, and also other Jewish institutions. I end with this brief conversation I recently had with our Pathways students. Those amazing human beings who spend nearly 2 years with us on a journey of choice to join our people. I asked them the same question that the Talmud directs rabbis to ask all individuals who seek to join our people. I asked them, do you still want to join the Jewish people? Why? The Talmud then instructs rabbis, if they respond, yes, I know this, and I still want to become Jewish, teach them some of the key principles of Judaism and convert them. To a person, our Pathways students responded to me, recent events have strengthened my desire to become Jewish. I am aware of the condition of the Jews. I want to join the Jewish people. In this spirit, and with this commitment, let us traverse the difficult months and years to come, honored by the trust that history has vested in us, and grateful that destiny has chosen us.